Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. Good afternoon. My name is Robert Fischel. My registration number is 34414. What we're here to talk about today is an interpretation of the insurance contract and two statutes and the interplay that those statutes have on the contract and the effect that it has on the contractual provision that American Family is trying to enforce today, or did enforce actually, and the court reduced the judgment rendered in favor of my client Arnold Calderon by the amount of medical payments. It is our position that both the statute 10-4609 and 10-4635 specifically prohibit that, and is a new statement of legislative intent to allow recovery of both of those benefits. What I'd like to point out, and it's a case that we did not cite in our brief, is State Farm versus Nissen. It's 851 P. Second 165. And in that, the Supreme Court started that in interpreting the insurance contract, the starting point is the plain language of the contract. And then on top of that, after the plain language, the court says that any ambiguities in the insurance contract are construed against, in this case, the State Farm, but it should be construed against American Family because it is the drafter of the contract.
Counsel, did you make an ambiguity argument in your briefs? I don't recall that you did.
Judge Jones, I don't recall. I thought there was at least a touch on it. I don't recall. In all honesty, I don't.
All right. I'd suggest you stick with the arguments raised in the briefs. We don't consider new arguments raised for the first time in oral argument.
Yes, sir. So then what we want to look at then is the statutes 10-4635 and 10-4609. 635 is the MedPay statute, and I may use that just sort of interchangeably, and then 609 is a UM statute. Again, I want to point out in this, and one of the things that the Supreme Court said is when they were looking at the uninsured motorist coverage in that particular case, they said that we have recognized legislative intent behind the statute, the UM statute, is to compensate innocent insureds for loss caused by financially irresponsible motorists. The Supreme Court went on to say the statute is meant to provide compensation for injury caused by an uninsured motorist equal to that obtainable for injury caused by an insured motorist. In the case of my client, Mr. Calderon, he was not treated equally by reducing the amount of the judgment by the $5,000 that was paid by MedPay. Example, or just in this particular case, if Ms. Morgan, who was the tortfeasor, if she had insurance, the judgment of $68,000 would have been paid. The full $68,000 would have been paid. But because Ms. Morgan had no insurance, an American Family had paid the $5,000 in MedPay, they got to reduce that $68,000 judgment by $5,000.
Well, didn't your client receive the same amount that he would have received from Ms. Morgan?
No, Your Honor, he did not. Because...
Well, he received $5,000 in MedPay from American Family, right?
Yes, sir, that's correct. But no, he did not. Again, if Ms. Morgan had been insured, he would have received $68,000 from Ms. Morgan's insurer, and he still would have received the $5,000 from American Family. It's non-severable, so in essence, he would have received $73,000. And it's contemplated in the statute. If you read 10-4635, and it's subsection 3, I believe it's A, Roman numeral 2, and it says nothing within this subsection shall be construed to limit benefits payable under 10-4609. So what the judge did in effect by reducing $5,000 is my client, because he was injured by an uninsured motorist, I mean basically adding insult to injury, he loses $5,000 benefit that he paid for, and he paid separate premiums for both. He should be entitled to those, to the benefits that he paid for. To not give him the benefits that he paid for, then the contract's illusory. The coverage is illusory. And so he should, in fact, be entitled to receive full compensation for what he paid for. The court went on in Nissen, and I think as important as anything else, is the legislative directive instructs us, again, talking about themselves, to find coverage for innocent insureds whenever possible. And that's what I urge this court to do. The court should find coverage whenever possible. And in this case, if the court affirms the court, the trial court's decision to reduce by $5,000, then the court fails to find coverage when it should be finding coverage. And while I don't believe there's any ambiguity in the language of the statute, 10.4609 says there shall not be a set-off for MedPay, health insurance, it goes on to say that, of any coverage. And then to couple that with 10.4635, the MedPay statute, saying nothing in this subsection shall be construed to reduce benefits payable. The court did not say limits. That's essentially the appellee's argument. But we're not affecting the limits because Mr. Calderon was foresighted enough, if you will, to have huge policy limits. But it didn't say that in the statute. The statute says benefits. We cannot reduce benefits. And that means whether it's $1 or the full $300,000.
Counsel, 635 seems to relate to the insurer's action or right of action against the tortfeasor. Seems to be limited to that. So I don't see what applicability it has to this case at all.
Let me pull this.
It talks about the insurer's right to recover against et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which I'm going to paraphrase as a tortfeasor.
You're under 635 subsection 3, Judge Jones?
Yes.
And where else is that? Is the modifier? Where is it more appropriate than under that subsection 3? Because by allowing them to offset the $5,000, in essence, the court's allowing them to subrogate. And what the 10.4635 subsection 3A says, there is no subrogation, period. And it goes on to say, nothing shall be construed under this subsection to allow them to offset any benefits payable, benefits. And again, Judge Jones, I can't stress that more importantly, because they didn't say, we're not going to reduce the limits, you're not allowed to reduce the limits. They said benefits. And so I think it's very important.
Counsel, the question is, though, on its face, the language applies to an action or a right of action by an insurer against a tortfeasor. We're not dealing with that.
Well, it says that they don't have a right to recover from the owner or user. It basically says they don't have a right to subrogation. And I agree that we're not dealing with the right of action. But again, that subsection, Roman numeral 2, is in the proper place within this statute. And also coupled with the reading under 10.4609, it says that you cannot affect the benefits payable, period.
No, 609 talks about coverage, not benefits. And the case law has recognized a distinction between those.
609 talks about providing coverage, and it also talks about the fact that it's now a damage offset as opposed to a limits offset is kind of how I characterize 10.4609. But the legislature went further than it had to in subpart C because they could have, by reading subpart C in 10.4609, the legislature could have, if they wanted to accomplish just a limits or damage offset as opposed to a limits offset, they could have stopped before they added that last paragraph or that last sentence. The last sentence is crucial. The amount of the coverage available shall not be reduced by any set off. And any way you look at it, Judge Jones, it's a set off.
Coverage. It's a set off against coverage. You're talking about a set off against benefits. Those are apples and oranges.
And I disagree. I think it's coverage. It's any coverage that's there, period. Coverage purchase, or whether it's a portion of the coverage. And I don't agree at all. I think that by allowing them to offset any coverage whatsoever, they're affecting what he has purchased and what he's made available. And like I said, I think the most important part and what the court needs to appreciate is that if the court allows an offset, like Judge Mullins did in this case, then every person in Mr. Calderon's shoes is going to be treated differently as opposed to anybody that was injured by an insured motorist. And that provides a windfall to the insurance company. Should not be allowed if there's a windfall. And I don't agree that there's a windfall because he paid for those benefits. And if the court finds it's a windfall, then again, I think some of the prior Supreme Court cases, even the, some of the cases cited by the appellee, show any windfall should go to the injured party, to the insured, as opposed to the insurance company. And that's what allowing a set-off, any way you call it, any way you call it, allowing a set-off is a windfall to the insurer and deprives an individual injured by an uninsured motorist of the same benefits he would be entitled to if he was injured by somebody who was insured. And he should not. I'm sorry, Judge Hawthorne, were you asking?
I was going to ask a question. Sorry to interrupt you.
No, please.
I believe it's undisputed that your client had $300,000 in coverage for uninsured motorists, underinsured motorists.
Those were his limits.
Benefits.
Yes, sir. Right?
So I'm wondering how, and maybe you can explain it to me, that the set off of $5,000 on the judgment awarded to your client reduced in any manner that $300,000 UM/UIM coverage.
It didn't reduce his limits, but it reduced the amount of coverage that he was entitled to under the provision of the policy that says you shall be compensated in an amount that you're legally entitled to receive from an uninsured motorist. And that's what the contract says, and that is within part of my brief. But there's also
a provision in the contract that says there will be no duplicate recovery or double recovery from different provisions of the contract.
Well, and I think that the contract is modified by what the legislature has done by amending 10.4609 and 10.4635. And I mean, let's be honest, as sophisticated as an insurance buyer as I might be, I have no power to negotiate the terms of an insurance policy with an insurance company. I'm going to go in and go, I want this coverage, and they're going to go, here's your policy. And so you have to rely on the state of Colorado to work in our favor, and they have done so. And they have done so on behalf of the consumer. And again, I think the legislative intent is very clear to say you cannot reduce benefits, you cannot reduce any coverage, whether it's the full limits, or in this case, Mr. Calderon was entitled to $68,000 worth of coverage under the uninsured motorist portion. And again, you read the contract and it says, we will pay compensatory damages for amount you're entitled to receive from an uninsured motorist. That's the coverage he's entitled to, whether it's a dollar or $300,000. And so by reducing it by $5,000, he is not given the full amount of his coverage, and he is treated differently and therefore unfairly as opposed to if he was hit by an insured motorist.
I'll remind you about 2.5 minutes.
I'm going to reserve that time. Thank you, Judge Hawthorne.
Thank you, counsel.
Good afternoon. My name is Jacqueline Booker. My attorney registration number is 32131, and I represent American Family Insurance Company. May it please the court, counsel, Arnold Calderon received 100% of the damages that he was legally entitled to collect from the tortfeasor, Brittany Morgan. He's here seeking more than 100% of his damages. Neither the plain language of the amended statute for uninsured motorist benefits nor the public policy of the state of Colorado requires an insurance company to pay a duplicate damage award.
Ms. Booker, I hate to interrupt you, but could you pull that microphone down a little bit? There you go. Thank you. It was right in front of your face.
Sorry about that. Arnold Calderon's damages were determined by a jury. They said that his award was approximately $68,000 for his entire damages related to the accident. $34,000 of that was past medical expenses. American Family's contract with Mr. Calderon did not allow for duplicate recovery of the exact same medical expenses that he already received under medical payment coverage. So the court reduced that amount, added prejudgment interest, brought it up to about $77,000, and that full amount was paid to Mr. Calderon. So it's undisputed, every single dollar of damages he was entitled to collect have been paid. It's just that $5,000 was paid under MedPay, and the rest was paid under uninsured motorist coverage.
Counsel,
Yes, sir.
Mr. Fischel is suggesting, though, that he would have been entitled to $73,000 from the tortfeasor if she had insurance.
And I think his argument relies upon the fact that if he was suing the tortfeasor directly, the contract exception to the collateral source statute would apply in that circumstance. But it does not apply when the payer of the alleged collateral source benefit is the same party as responsible for paying the tort damages.
So his position is essentially the damages would have been the same, $68,000, would have collected $68,000 from the tortfeasor and also $5,000 from your client, because that could not be offset. Is that correct?
That's correct.
All right.
The trial court's application of the contract provision in this case actually gives both parties the benefit of the bargain of their contract, because it specifically provided that he was not entitled to duplicate recovery. In addition, the enforcement of the contract provision also effectuates the legislative intent behind the uninsured motorist statute, which has been expounded upon many times by the Colorado Supreme Court. And the purpose of that statute is to provide availability of insurance coverage for protection against financially irresponsible drivers. So in this situation, Mr. Calderon got 100% of the damages he was entitled to collect from the tortfeasor. So the intent of the uninsured motorist statute is not impaired by the trial court enforcing the contract provision.
Counsel, I believe Mr. Fischel is arguing that the statute, particularly 10.4635.3b2, makes that provision of your client's contract, or the insurance contract, not necessarily just your client's, void by statutory construction. How do you respond to that?
Well, the provision relied upon in the MedPay statute, 10.4635, by the plaintiff, is actually deals with subrogation, which is where the insurance company would pay out a benefit and then go against the at-fault party to recover that from the at-fault party. Here, there are no facts similar to that. So that provision does not apply, but what that provision actually does show the court is that the legislature knew the difference between the word coverage that they used in 10.4609, the uninsured motorist statute, and benefits payable that they used in the subrogation provision of the MedPay statute. They used the word coverage in 10.4609 to say that you couldn't reduce the UM coverage, which means the policy limit, by a set off from the other coverage, MedPay coverage. That's not what's happening here. Because Arnold Calderon, if he had $305,000 in damages, he would be entitled to get his full policy limit of uninsured motorist coverage, $300,000, plus the $5,000 of medical payment coverage. There is absolutely nothing in the uninsured motorist statute as written with the amendments that precludes the contract provision here, because he's never going to have a reduction of coverage below what his damages are. He's going to be paid his damages. In the court in the Jaycox versus American Family decision, which was decided under the revised 10.4609, said that the changes that were made to the statute by the legislature were not, I think, an intent by the General Assembly to put all the requirements of uninsured motorist coverage in the statute. So the parties are still free to contract. And that's an important point. The purpose of those amendments was to change the whole way that the system worked from a reduction approach to an excess approach. And it doesn't address duplication of benefits. But we know from the public policy of the state of Colorado, which is explained in detail in the Levy versus American Family decision, and it's also codified in the collateral source statute, that duplicate recovery is not favored in the state of Colorado.
But I think Mr. Fischel is saying that he's entitled, or his client is entitled, to duplicate recovery because he paid for two different benefits, two different coverages, rather, under the insurance contract, the UM, UIM coverage, and the med pay, and that they're two separate coverages, and therefore he should be able to collect from both because he paid for both.
It's true that he did pay a premium for both coverages, but both of the coverages under the insurance policy do not provide for duplicate recovery of the same elements of loss. That is what he paid for with his premiums. And here, Mr. Calderon got full indemnification of all of his losses, and there isn't anything in the state of Colorado, as expressed in the amendments of 10.4609 and the public policy of the state, that requires a duplicate recovery to the plaintiff under these circumstances. And even in the Jordan v. Safeco case, which is another case that talked about the new version of the uninsured motorist statute, they said that uninsured motorist coverage does not require full indemnification of losses suffered at the hands of uninsured motorists under all circumstances. But here, Mr. Calderon did get full indemnification of his losses. Mr. Calderon's argument that coverage is somehow illusory, which I think is his argument that he paid two premiums, and if the contract provision is enforced, then this coverage is somehow illusory and he gets nothing. That's not true. Medicaid coverage is coverage that it provides for medical expenses regardless of fault. So even if you rear-end somebody, you have that coverage available. Uninsured motorist coverage is to cover your damages from the tortfeasor for a financially irresponsible motorist who didn't have insurance. When a consumer purchases both of these coverages, they get the benefit of insuring against both of the risks. And here, the purpose of insurance in general is to insure against a risk or protect against a loss. And Mr. Calderon would never have the risk of having to pay his medical providers twice. So insurance companies are not insuring against that risk. In addition, protection of losses, the other purpose of insurance. Mr. Calderon has been protected from his losses in this case. So it doesn't make any sense for this contract provision not to be enforced as written, because all it does is preclude duplicate recovery for the exact same elements of loss that he's already been paid for. And in addition, there is a case from the federal 10th Circuit that is cited with approval in Colorado Permanente versus Evans, which is a Supreme Court case dealing with the collateral source statute. And that case actually had a contract claim against an insurance company for uninsured motorist benefits. And that court said that there is no reason why the insurance company should be required to pay twice. There is no public policy in insuring double recovery. In conclusion, Arnold Calderon received every penny of the damages that he was legally entitled to collect from the tortfeasor in this case. He shouldn't be entitled to more than that. The plain language of the uninsured motorist statute says that the coverage shouldn't be reduced from a setoff from the MedPay coverage. That's a little bit of a paraphrase, but that's essentially what it says. His coverage is not impaired, because if he had damages that were $305,000, he would get both coverages. All this provision does is make sure that he's not getting a duplicate recovery for the exact same elements of loss. And that is allowed under the statute's plain language. We think that the policy provision was properly enforced by the trial court, and it also, this enforcement of the policy provision actually effectuates the legislative intent of the uninsured motorist statute, which is to provide compensation to somebody who's hit by a financially irresponsible motorist. Here, Mr. Calderon got 100% of his damages, and he should not be entitled to more than that, because there is no public policy to be fulfilled with that provision. And in addition, in the Levy versus American Family case, the court said, I know that's under the prior statute, but the court said that those two coverages are not the exact same coverage, and it's not illusory to go ahead and give the insurance company credit for a payment it already made for the exact same medical expenses. And in that case, there wasn't even a contract provision to be enforced, and the court said that. Here, we have a plain language insurance provision which says no one will be entitled to receive duplicate payments for the same elements of loss. There's nothing in the statute or the public policy of Colorado which prevents this court from enforcing that provision. So we ask that the trial court affirm, or that the trial court's decision be affirmed.
So you're putting, let me rephrase it a little bit just to make sure what you're saying is that if the $5,000 med pay benefits that were paid to Mr. Calderon resulted in impairment of the $300,000 UMUIM coverage, then that would not be allowed.
That's correct. And I think that if the provision was broader and it required an offset, no, regardless of if it was a duplicate recovery that was being sought, that would be outlawed. And I think that something similar happened under the prior version of the statute in the Newton versus Nationwide case. That one dealt with PIP benefits, and the provision was so broad that the court said, you might be, and it kind of gave the insurance company a hint, if you tailor your provision to preclude duplicate recovery for the same elements of loss, that would be okay. And I think that's exactly what the result is here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Fischel, you have about 2.5 minutes.
Thank you, Judge Hawthorne. You know, the question is what coverage did Mr. Calderon purchase? He didn't purchase a $300,000 coverage. He purchased an insurance policy that provided coverage for uninsured and underinsured motorist benefits. And so the coverage he purchased was compensatory damages for bodily injury caused by an uninsured motorist that you're legally entitled to receive. That's what he purchased. Now, he had higher limits, but he purchased an insurance coverage that says, and read the policy, it says you got coverage for being hit by an uninsured motorist. We're going to pay what benefits you're legally entitled to receive. And 1046.09 says you can't offset MedPay benefits for the coverage that you purchased. It doesn't say limits. And that's their position. The position is he's got to be damaged to $305,000 before that's what you got to read that provision. That's wrong. It's just wrong. And Judge Jones, you hit on it, and kind of barred my argument, I guess, when you asked Ms. Booker the question. He is treated differently because he is hit by an uninsured motorist as opposed to an insured motorist.
All right, so, but it's treated differently in this sense. The collateral source statute would allow your client a windfall in the other circumstance. But why does that mean the legislature always has to allow your client a windfall?
Well, and I disagree with that characterization.
Well,
that's
how the courts have characterized it. And they've expressly said it allows a windfall, but it's better that the windfall be in favor of the insured. So the courts have recognized that that's a windfall.
Well, in years past, I agree the courts have recognized that's a windfall. It's a windfall based on the prior statutes. And the prior statutes under 1046.35 allowed subrogation. So the insured or the individual who was injured by whether it was uninsured motorist or an insured motorist ended up in the exact same situation. The modification can't mean nothing. Honestly, 1046.35 says you can't reduce the benefits, and he is treated differently, completely differently and unfairly. And the insurance company reaps the windfall itself by getting the benefit of the premiums for both the MedPay and the UM. And again, under the Nielsen
case. Mr. Fischel, I'm just trying to understand why the insurance company gets a windfall here. Your client is $68,000 in damages, and the insurance company paid $68,000. How is that a windfall?
They pay $68,000 under the uninsured motorist coverage, and then they keep, but, or I'm sorry, no, they don't. Well,
they retain $5,000.
They paid $63,000.
They retain $5,000 that would be a double recovery for your client.
Well, again, but he paid for separate premiums on that.
And he paid for a clause that allows the offset too.
Well, and again, I would respectfully disagree, because I think that he pays for the protection of what the Colorado legislature has intended, and the legislature has intended, as the court said under Newsom, and I'll kind of sort of finish with that, is that the statute, the UM statute, is meant to provide compensation for an injury caused by an uninsured motorist equal to that obtainable by for an injury caused by an insured motorist. If the court upholds the reduction made by the trial court, he's not treated equally. I ask that the court reverse and remand the decision of the trial court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both for your arguments. The arguments will be very helpful to the division and making its decision, and the matter will now stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. Thank you again, and counsel are excused.